Welcome to the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast. Every 2 weeks, we explore news and issues affecting hunters, anglers, and conservation across the northeastern United States. If you enjoy the content here, be sure to subscribe to our print or digital versions by calling 800-535-5191 or visit our website at outdoornews.com. Now, here's your host and a man who claims he's immune to buck fever, New York Outdoor News editor Dan Ladd.
This episode of the Great Northeast Podcast is brought to you by the Family Forest Carbon Program, a collaborative initiative created by two nonprofit organizations, the American Forest Foundation and the Nature Conservancy, assisting landowners in improving the health of their land with long-term sustainable forest management practices while providing guaranteed annual income. Learn more at familyforestcarbon.org. Talking Turkey. Hey, greetings and welcome to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News. Happy to be along. Happy to have you along as we're starting to approach the spring turkey seasons. And that's what we're going to talk about primarily today. We've got a lot coming up. We still got a few weeks before May 1st hits here, which is the opening day for several states. I believe it's the opening day in Maine. I know it is in Vermont. It also is in New York. Not sure about some of the surrounding New England states, but a few of them also have youth hunts. In fact, New York's youth hunt is April 25th and 26th. And we're going to talk quite a bit today about mentoring, but we're going to talk about turkey hunting in general. In fact, you're going to hear one of the world's worst turkey callers, and that is yours truly. And my point is, I say this all the time about hunting in general, hunters are made, not born. And what I mean by that is you can learn to turkey hunt. Anybody can learn to turkey hunt on their own. And I am a walking, living proof of that. I've been through all of the motions, learned how to do some things on my own, also learned from other people, which is important. And I'm very lucky and very fortunate for that. But the whole thing is to pay attention to what people are telling you and what other people are doing. There's obviously a lot you can get from videos and such. So we're going to talk about all kinds of this stuff today. Right now here in New York, boy, we've got a boiler room going over these deer hunting proposals, regulations that mostly have to do with antlerless deer, the Earn a Second Buck program. We talked about that in the previous podcast 2 weeks ago. Urge you to go back and listen to that. You'll get a good summary of that and those proposals. Of course, you can read about them in New York Outdoor News, primarily the April 3rd edition. We've got the April 17th edition about to come out here pretty soon. I'll have a little bit more on that, especially some letters from readers. But the gist of it, the details are on DEC's website. That's the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. The proposals are there, the press release, and a real big Q&A document, and of course, the 10-year deer management plan they put out in 2021. Read that stuff, and be sure to send your comments to DEC if you hunt in New York before May 17th. We'll probably talk some more about that down the road, and we're definitely going to be writing about it in New York Outdoor News. But for today, we're going to focus on wild turkeys. And one of the things we want to tell you about coming up in Vermont, West Paulette on Saturday, April 18th, there's going to be basically a celebration of the history of wild turkeys in Vermont and how they did the same type of restoration that was done in New York with the help of Pennsylvania and New York, the pen netting, that type of thing. Really cool stuff. And that's in my wheelhouse. I live in Washington County, which is right next to the border of Vermont, including Paulette. So I'm hoping to get over there and catch up to that program myself. And real curious about that stuff, of course. I love all things turkey. So we're going to come right back, talk about mentoring. And again, you're going to hear the world's worst turkey caller right after this.
Are you an avid angler searching for the latest fishing news and tips? It's time to check out OutdoorNews.com. Get ready to reel in the freshest updates and expert advice from top anglers. Plus, you'll have access to the most up-to-date fishing reports, lake maps, lake reports, and more. Don't let the big one get away. Join OutdoorNews.com and reel in a world of fishing knowledge and expertise. Join today, OutdoorNews.com. Your passion, your news, your fishing journey.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News, and we're going to talk turkey. That's what we're here to do today, and everybody's getting pumped up for turkeys. I haven't really seen as many as I'd like to see. Been driving around the farm country in New York and southern Vermont recently, and you know, what turkeys I am seeing are in big flocks, but that's going to change soon. Those flocks are going to break up, and I can't promise you this, but in my areas where I hunt, if there's a big flock around, usually once they break up, you're going to find those pockets of birds that have broken up. Say there's a flock of 40, 50 birds, you're going to find pockets of, you know, 6, 8, 10, maybe even less, probably anywhere within a half to three quarters of a mile of that area. So if you see them in one spot now, that doesn't mean they're going to be there in 3 weeks when the season opens, or in 2 weeks when you're youth hunting, but they should be somewhere close by. So keep that in mind. You know, if you see them on a field that's near where you hunt, or public land perhaps, and they could be anywhere. One thing looking out for in some early scouting is if you had acorns last fall, or even beech nuts, there's a good chance you're going to find some birds, at least during the early part of the season, in that those areas, scarfing up those acorns that are left, because birds like hardwoods, they like the mast, they've got to eat, and that's a good place to start early on, especially before foliation really, really starts to kick in. So that's something I'm going to be keying in on. But what I really want to talk about in the first part of this is mentoring. And this is, again, in relation to youth seasons that are coming up, but it doesn't have to be. You can always take a young hunter out during the regular season. And just a few tips. I've done quite a bit of mentoring in the last 10, 15 years, and I've been with kids when they've pulled the trigger on a gobbler, and it's really, really something to see. I can't even explain how rewarding it is to see a young kid kill, especially their first turkey, but they just get excited. They get excited when the bird's coming in. They obviously get excited if they've had some success. It's a wonderful thing to see, and it's even more special when you have the parent along taking place in the hunt with you. That really is encouraging. So that's something we like to see. So where do we start with mentoring? Well, there's quite a lot of ways. I got a friend of mine who calls it renting a kid. Once he got through all of his grandchildren who are now grown, and there's obviously going to be a time period before his great-grandchildren are available to him to take out, he runs out of kids to take out, so he calls it renting a kid. And fortunately, here in New York, and we highlighted several of these in an article in the April 3rd edition of New York Outdoor News, there's a whole bunch of youth hunting programs going on. In some cases, our NCON officers help set these up. They work with county federations, chapters of the NWTF, and even other sportsmen's groups, you know, whether it's Pheasants Forever or Rough Grouse Society. Hey, we're all on the same team here when it comes to that stuff. So there's some programs out there. If you live in an area, try to find one of these. You might find something at a local fishing game club. Stop in, ask somebody, look at their websites, their Facebook pages. And of course, you can start with that article on New York Outdoor News, which is on our website, outdoornews.com/New York. But no matter where you are, hopefully there's something going on if you have a young person that wants to get involved. If you want to be a mentor yourself, same thing. Offer your services. Now, folks are going to want to check you out. They're going to want to know who you are before you take a child out, especially if you're a stranger. And there are protocols for that, but pretty simply done. And I've been affiliated with a program here in Washington County, New York, for a few years. I'm not taking a kid out from that program this year because I can only go one of the days, and one of my hunting partners is working on getting his grandson out. So we're gonna focus on that and hopefully get the young man a shot. But I've done them in the past, and what some of these programs do is they'll bring the kids in, and they'll spend a day with them or part of a day, give them a turkey hunting seminar, pattern their shotguns, which is really, really important, and then get them as ready as possible for the youth turkey hunt. But that's where you as a mentor kick in. The first thing, just like your own turkey hunting, you got to have a spot to take the kids. Now, that's something I've struggled with, to be honest with you. I do a lot of my turkey hunting in the northern zone in the mountains, and it's I don't know if a young kid's going to like being dragged a couple miles in the woods the way I go, the way I run and gun in these areas. So when I've taken part in these programs, I've asked them to find us a spot. And landowners are been more than willing to do so to help out a kid. So I get a spot where I can take a kid. I can't necessarily hunt there myself when I'm, you know, during the regular turkey season. But during the youth season, I've been able to take a kid there. And it's worked out well, worked out real well. And we've had some success, and we've had some days where we've seen some birds and didn't get shots at them. But anyway, it was a good experience. So you got to find some birds, and hey, folks, don't be selfish. You know, if you've got a spot where you've got some birds and you want to hang on to them for yourself, yeah, I get that to a degree, but come on, we got to nurture our next generation here. And, there'll be other birds there. If you kill your big Tom, it's not the end of the world. Trust me, I've experienced it, and it's a wonderful thing again to see a young kid, to have success. So you got to find a spot, and I always like it when the parent or grandparent comes along, you know, basically the guardian. And that makes it even more rewarding. It takes the pressure off me with the young person who I may or may not know that well. It lets them, you know, take care of them, so to speak, in terms of food, water, any issues they may have, whether they have a food allergy or something like that. When you got the parent along, you know, that allows you as a mentor just to focus on the hunt. And which is what I like. But sometimes it doesn't work out that way, and that's okay. I have a kid shoulder to shoulder, and that's just fine too. But and it's really good to sit down and talk with a kid, get to know them, and they become your friends. And I have young people that I mentored 10 years ago who are adults now who are mentoring themselves. They're taking kids out now, which is also wonderful to see. So you've got a spot. If you can, set up a blind. It makes sense to set up a blind. You can't always do that, but obviously a blind keeps people comfortable. If you got a couple chairs in there, you set the young person down. Let's face it, there could be quiet times. You know, if a kid wants to fool around on their phone, let them do it. If they want to take a nap, they might doze off. That's fine too. Again, you can just focus on the turkey hunt and doing what you do to, you know, make something happen. The other thing about a blind is obviously covers concealment. You know, let's face it, young people can be fidgety, and I've experienced that. So a blind is a good thing. If you have a grandparent or a parent along, what I've done is set them up behind the blind. A blind is on the edge of the woods. I tell them to bring a chair, or I bring one for them, and we set them up right behind the blind. We crack the window so they can communicate with the child and the young person, and myself and the young person are in the blind. And I'm working the calls and calling the shots, and that works really well. And you can all communicate. And the thing about this is, obviously, with turkeys, you know, you can talk a little bit. You can and whisper in a low tone while you're in the blind, and that's when you get to know these people. It's a great thing. Of course, once the birds come into the play, then hey, it's game time. But obviously, again, concealment is important. It doesn't always work out that way. The next thing is when the birds come in. Now, this is where safety comes to mind, and I am constantly reminding my youth hunter about gun safety. And they're usually pretty good because most of the time they've just come out of a hunter education class, and they're pretty up on things, and they're pretty serious about it. But the main thing is, you know, when to load the gun. I usually have them load, you know, once we're in the blind, but and make sure the safety's on, and I'll ask them every half hour, hey, is your safety on? Hey, you know, how's your, you know, it's just something to keep reminding them. And that's good. That's a good thing to do. The other thing is, obviously, no finger on the trigger until that gun is up and you're ready to take the shot at a turkey. And the other thing that I've heard people forgetting about, and this is easy to do, a young person has success. They just shot a turkey. Now it's up to you to make sure that gun is safe. This is where a single shot is really handy. You know, if you've got them with a single shot firearm, like I have a little 410 that I can offer up to use. I've seen people with single shot 20s and even 28s. But if you got a single shot, that's not an issue. But if they've got a pump, you know, or a semi or something like that, I'm always telling them, you know, as soon as you shoot, pump another one in. And then I'm watching the bird with one eye and kind of watching the kid with the other. But that's something you kind of got to remember to do if you're a mentor, is keep an eye on them. And that's something you can also work with a parent on. And so, again, that's real important, because when you jump out of that blind to go after that bird, you got to make sure the gun is safe. Just keep that in mind. Don't forget it. Of course, calling, I'm not going to tell you how to call. We're going to talk about that in the next segment. But the main thing is show the kid a good time. I always have snacks, candy, whatever, something to pass the time. I've usually got a joke or two or stories. And, of course, I'm right there to answer any questions that any of them have, the guardian, the kid, anybody. You know, I try my best to do that. And I try to teach them along the way. I explain to them why I'm making this call, what I'm doing, what I'm trying to say to the turkeys. Anything that can help them learn, is that's why you're there. You're there to teach. So don't forget that. Trying to think of anything else I should mention about mentoring other than have a good time and make sure you get some good pictures. If you have some luck, even if you don't have luck, take some pictures and you know, circulate them around. We love seeing them in our reader shots and Outdoor News. If you send us some photos, you know, right on our website, you just go to the reader shots page and submit the photo. Tell us a story, especially if you got a good story. You know, tell us how it went down, anything special that took place during the hunt. We love hearing that stuff. So I think that covers it with mentoring. When we come back, we're going to talk calling right after this.
There's a great program available for youth who love to hunt and fish. It's called the Outdoor News Junior Pro Team, and any youth 18 or under can join for free at jrproteam.com. JPT program showcases useful videos and tips to help encourage the next generation to become stronger anglers and hunters. It's a platform to celebrate and inspire those outdoor loving youth. Check out the photos of Outdoor News Junior Pro Team members on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. And visit our jrproteam.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News. And that last spot was about the Junior Pro Team. And while we're on the subject of mentoring, we definitely encourage you young folks to get involved with the Junior Pro Team here at Outdoor News. It's a great program. And, well, you just heard the spot. If you haven't, go back and give that a listen and let that young person tell you all about it. What we want to talk about now is calling turkeys. And, again, I'm going to say that I learned by watching. I learned by paying attention to those who I turkey hunted with. My story real quick is I started turkey hunting as a young person in the early 1980s when it was fairly new. And all I had was a mouth call. That's all my parents could really afford for me was that. And I was terrible with it. And I still am terrible with it. Although this year I've kind of made a commitment to getting better with a mouth call and actually using it, because last year I think I blew it a chance for not so much me, but my brother to get a shot at a couple of jakes. My brother's fairly new to turkey hunting, and I think my movement might have distracted them a little bit. They just didn't want to come close. They circled us, but that's a whole nother story. But so I'm going to try to improve my mouth calling. But what I have is a series of calls that I use when I turkey hunt. And again, I am not the world's greatest caller, but I have had luck. Some of that luck is knowing when to call or not to overcall, and kind of just by learning about turkeys by seeing them. Spending time in the woods around turkeys really will teach you a lot. The more experiences you have, the more you will learn, because there really is, in my opinion, no one thing to do in a given situation. Birds are so unpredictable. But there's a few things, few rules I kind of live by that I think have helped me over the years, and we'll talk about these as we go along. My first choice of a call is a box call, and what I have in my hand right now is a Lynch's World Champion turkey call, a number 10-102S. This is a very popular, very common call. There's a lot you can do with it, and I was just listening to a podcast recently, and the person on there said, if you're new to turkey hunting, pick up one call and learn how to use that call before you move on to another call. And by the call, I mean the type of call, box call, mouth call. There's various friction calls. We're going to go through three different ones here and very shortly, but we're going to start with this box call. This is a call you've probably seen in just about every magazine and for sale anywhere. Or others like it, Quaker Boy, makes a whole bunch of box calls. There's so many out there. This one has rubber bands and eyelets that hold it together. You can actually make a gobble with it, or try to make a gobble. We'll demonstrate that. But literally, it's all about yelping. Now, what this call says is there's you yelp on one side, it's a hen. You yelp on the other, it's a gobbler. So here's the hen. And here's the gobbler. Gobbler's a little deeper, and there's people that'll tell you use a different cadence. The bottom line is you can make a hen yelp on this call. You can take this call very loud. It'll cover ground. It'll cut through wind on a windy morning. It'll cut through raindrops. You want to keep it dry, but the sound will cut through. And I live on box calls, because I'll get out there in the morning. If I'm not hearing birds at all, I'm going to let rip. You know, I'm going to let some yelps go. The other thing you can do with this is you can purr with it a little bit. You can just kind of Again, you got to practice. Right now I've got the rubber bands on this because I'm going to do the gobble, but I take them off and it gives you a little more flexibility with the paddle. But and then you can cut, which is what I really like. It's like a loud cluck. You know, these are sounds turkeys make. When you're around turkeys, you're going to hear them make these sounds. So I think every turkey hunter should have a box call in their arsenal. Don't laugh at this. I'm going to try to do the gobble. I haven't had luck gobbling birds in, but every once in a while, I'll just take a call and go. You got to work on your rhythm a little bit, but these are the things you can do with a box call. Up next is a slate call, often called a pot call. And slate calls, pot calls, well, pot calls aren't just slate calls. Some are made from glass. Some are made from copper or brass or whatever, steel. I just carry a slate with me. It's what I like, and I like to use a good striker. If you're going to invest in anything, get yourself a good striker. I like a nice multi-wood laminated striker. There's a whole bunch of them out there. I've got a local fellow that makes them, and I picked up some from him. And I usually basically just use it like a pencil on a call, like I'm drawing. And I'm just going to do some really soft yelps here. Just now, when am I going to do that? I'm going to do that when I can maybe – I know some birds are fairly close by. Maybe they're not coming in yet. They're assembled. Maybe there's a tom with hens. And I'm just trying to let them know, hey, there's some turkeys over here. Hey, I'm over here. And I'm just doing some talk. I might do some purrs. Again, I'm not the world's greatest turkey caller, and I'm just starting to get my practicing in here. But you can do some clucks. And, of course, you can do the yelps. The whole thing about having different strikers is you get different sounds. This is a plastic striker I'm going to use now. And you'll hear a little bit of a different sound from that. And the beauty of that is you want the birds to think there's more than one turkey over there. You've got three or four decoys out, or a couple of decoys. Hey, we got a party going on here. There's food over here. Come on over. You know, that's what you're trying to say to the birds. Or, hey, I'm a lovesick hen, and I want your company, Mr. Gobbler. That's another thing you're saying. But pot call, if you carry one of these, especially a slate, carry a little sandpaper with you, because especially if it gets wet. You want to keep these calls dry, and you want to touch it up with the sandpaper regularly, especially if you're using it. And even just carrying it in your pocket is going to wear some of that off. So carry a striker or a couple different strikers, and also use your sandpaper religiously. A couple novelty calls I have here that I'm very fond of. The first one is called a do-rawl, and this is the Sassy Slate. You can carry this in your pocket. Now, one of my mentors was an outdoor writer named Ed Newton, a very close friend and a very, very passionate turkey hunter. And Ed hooked me up with this call. In fact, I think he gave me this call. And it literally is maybe the size of a remote control. You can use it with one hand. And it's very sensitive. It's got three different spots to put your thumb on, but I'm holding this in my left hand, and I'm just doing this with my thumb. Just a little purrs. You can do clucks. You can, if you really practice, you can get a good cut. But what I really like this call for is if they're in close, but they're not close enough, and I'm trying to get them to come in, a couple times I've had a hen come in, and she's right there with my decoys, sometimes just a few feet from me, but the gobbler's out there, and I'm really hesitant to move. And again, I'm not good with a mouth call, so I don't have a mouth call in. This is why I'm going to learn to use it for this exact situation. But I might have this do-rawl call right by my side or literally in my hand under the gun stock, maybe in a pocket, and I'm just working it. I'm just... And this sometimes will drive a hen nuts, especially if she doesn't know you're there. And one morning, I'm going to tell you a quick story here. One morning, I didn't have a decoy out. I was hunting on a mountain, and I brought a hen down really early. She came right down, and she was literally just 4 or 5 yards from me. And then three gobblers came down behind her. And this all happened in the course of about a half an hour. And I was trying to get them in closer. And so I didn't want her to go away. Now, I had no decoys out, so she come down. She's literally right there wondering where this hen is that is, you know, making all this noise and causing her all this frustration. She was really, really frustrated that she couldn't find me, and I just kept working this call. Every time she started to go away, I just And she would perk up and look around and yelp, and she was mad. And eventually she brought those three gobblers in, and one of them went home in my truck. Another time, I work different calls. You know, I'll work this with the slate or maybe the box just to make the different sounds of different turkeys. It was opening morning a few years ago, and I was hunting on a dirt road. It's a road that actually goes into one of our camps, but there's nobody around that time of year, very, very isolated. So I got this, I heard a gobble, heard him coming down, but he had a hen with him, and she was just feeding probably 80 yards away down the road. And he was just right on her, you know, he was staying real close. And I just kept trying to get her attention. And I kept working the slate mostly in the do-raw call, just with the little clucks and purrs. Finally, I got her attention. She spotted the decoys. I had a Jake and a hen out, and she just started to march right towards him. He came behind her, and I put him down at about 30 yards. And he was a nice bird, big time. But the real success story I have with this do-raw happened out in the Thousand Islands region. We were at an outdoor writers meeting out there. Real cool story. We got taken by ferry over to this island, to Grindstone Island, and we were hunting some private property. And I had a pretty good chunk that I was able to hunt, about 200 acres, three fields. And we had a rainstorm. And just before the rainstorm, I spotted a gobbler with a pair of hens. And it was two fields over. And there was one field in front of me. I had to go through a little swamp to get to it. And I figured, well, I'm going to get down there and get in that other field and see if I can get in position on these birds and then try and call them from there. And sure enough, by the time I got there, they were there. So I literally pop up over this little hill, and there's the birds, you know, 100 yards away or so, making their way across this field. So I'm on my belly, and I've got this call in my hand, and I'm just doing this. The two hens came right over. They were literally feet from me, and I'm laying on my belly, and the gobbler just kept getting closer and closer and closer. When the two hens turned to go away with their backs to me, I just slowly stood up, and I shot that gobbler. So that's, you know, type of thing that type of call can do for you. I've got another call here. This is one of my favorites. And again, you're going to stumble on calls that nobody might have ever heard of, or, you know, they're novelty calls. And what I have here is the Tom Gaskins turkey call out of Venus, Florida. Now, I'm sure you've heard of Tom Kelly, the legendary turkey hunter who is still out there doing it. I think he's over 90 years old now, but, he markets this call on his website, and, I saw it demoed. I thought it was really cool. It's no longer than a small cigar case. In fact, I call it a cigar box. It's probably about 6 or 7 inches long, and no bigger than, again, a cigar tube. But it's square, and it's got a little like a something you might see on a musical instrument, vented. And there's a little rib here that you can chalk, and of course, there's a striker. And it took me a while to get to learn this call, but I really like this call. One, because again, it provides a different hen sound. And this is a call that I've used when I've been using the pot call or the box call all morning, and the birds just aren't, they're used to other hunters using those same calls, and, you know, they're just not committed. So I'll pull out this call, and I'll try this, and it usually gets a gobble out of them, if anything, and sometimes it sends them in for a closer look. Here we go. A nice raspy call. And you can also do some good cuts with this. Again, this took a lot of practice because of the right angle. And I'm actually surprised I'm doing it as good as I am doing it, because I'm just getting started on using this call for the season. It usually takes me a little work, you know, before the season to get this up to speed. And there's probably some of you guys out there listening who are saying, yeah, he's got a lot of work to do before turkey season. But I'm going to argue that point. Again, this call is just another call to have in your arsenal. It looks just like a cigar box. The striker fits down in the hole, put a cork over it, and you're good to go. But we're going to talk more about why you don't have to be a great turkey caller to kill turkeys when we come back right after this.
Your land is your legacy, but keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land in Vermont, Massachusetts, or New York, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News, hoping to install a little bit of hope and faith in you folks for turkey season. As I said earlier, turkey hunters are made. They're not born, and I am living proof of that. As a young kid roaming around the woods near my home with a mouth call, calling terribly, I actually lured in a gobbler one morning. I was about 15 years old, which I promptly missed. But I couldn't believe I actually called that bird in when it happened. I did not expect to see the bird, and that's the first lesson right there. Always expect to get a reaction. Even if they're not talking, they could be coming in silently, especially if they're birds that have been pressured, if they're birds that have been had their butts whipped by other toms, they might be coming in quiet. So you got to be patient, and patience probably kills more birds than anything. I know people if they don't hear a gobbler, they're gone in half an hour. And sometimes that's me, because it all depends on your situation too. If you're going out in the morning before work, say you've got to be to work at 9 a.m. or 8 a.m., you've only got a couple hours to hunt, and this spot isn't cutting it, well, you might go to another spot. But if you've got the whole morning and you're confident there's birds around, even if you're not hearing them, that's when it pays to be patient, because you never know when they're going to show up. And it's going to vary through the season too, because, you know, one day they're with hens and the next day those hens are on the nest and not paying any attention to the gobbler, and he's lovesick, and he might be a little more incisive at that point. So you've got to stick it out, and it's different from day to day. Sometimes it's different from hour to hour. So patience is a big thing. But learning from other people is where I really was lucky. I had a friend of mine named Ross Sheridan who took me out in my early days of having a regular outdoor column in a local newspaper. One of the things I really wanted to get back into when I started outdoor writing was turkey hunting. I would only do it a little bit here and there. I was really into it when I was younger, got away from it from college. It was hard to do during my early working career years, and because of time, building homes, playing in bands, all the things that you do. But when I really settled into becoming an outdoor journalist is when I really got back into turkey hunting, and basically just have been nonstop ever since. So I learned a lot from hunting with this guy and a few other folks that I went along with, going to outdoor writer meetings and going out with a couple of guides and also a couple of writers who were much more fluent at this than me, and watching how they call and when they call, and how they approach turkeys in different situations, and then applying that to the turkeys that I hunt in the areas that I hunt. So how do I get success? Well, I'll tell you what, I spend a lot of time finding birds, and I don't want to call it scouting. It's just finding birds to hunt, paying attention to what people are telling you. Somebody's going to say, hey, I saw a flock up here, or I saw a big tom there, or I heard this, or I saw that. And if it's somewhere near where you can hunt, then you got to put that on your list, of places to potentially look for a bird. And you got to think about whether anybody else is hunting that bird. If it's a spot that you have pretty good access to and you don't think anyone else is around, then that's definitely an A-plus spot to consider hunting, because you can call a bird in from a long way. I know I've called them in from a half mile away and probably farther, but I know for sure that I've called birds in from a half mile away using a nice loud box call to get them started and then working them from there. Sitting still, not being fidgety is really key, being patient. But again, my biggest thing is and this is what works for me, I don't overcall. But I know people who do and are very successful, so I'm not telling you not to overcall. I'm just saying, because I don't consider myself a great turkey caller, I do not overcall. I just get my calls going. I make my yelps. But the other thing I try to do is I try to put some emotion into it. I don't just go rap, 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 and I try to make something happen. I try to at least, be as aggressive or as passive as the birds I'm talking with. And I also talk to hens. If hens are making noise, I'm going to make the same noises they're making. I love getting into it with a hen and getting them ticked off, because you never know when there's a gobbler right behind them, and that will bring birds into your setup. If not every time, but sometimes. I don't always roost birds. I don't have that luxury at night to roost birds. Some of the places I hunt, I've got to drive 45 minutes to get to, so I'm not going to do that the night before, especially with today's gas prices. And just time. I just have these spots where I'm confident there's birds. What I do What I will be doing between now and the 1st of May, and even then some once the season is going, I spend a lot of time on the roads. Forget what I just said about gas prices. I will be driving the roads, especially early in the morning before first light, and I'm just listening. The one thing I do not do is call to turkeys with turkey calls before I hunt them. That is a big no-no. I do not do that. Now, one thing I will do in the morning before while they're still in a roost, I've been saying how I'm not a great turkey caller, but I've been told I have a pretty good owl hoot. I will get out of my truck, shut it right off, let the woods calm down, wait about 5 minutes, and then just go, hoo, 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 hoo. And if I hear gobbling, I try to pinpoint them in my areas. I know there's birds there. I leave them alone. That's obviously one of the first things I do in the morning when I enter a field or I'm walking down a wood, log road in the woods in the mountains. If I'm not hearing gobbles, I let out an owl hoot. I have one spot that I hunt. There's two places the birds usually are. When I walk in the woods, I'm in the middle of these two places. I let out an owl hoot, and then if I hear gobbles, sometimes I hear them both sides, and I've got to pick. But if I only hear them on one, well, guess where I'm, what area I'm gravitating towards. So the owl hoot is a good thing to learn, and again, you don't have to overdo it. You just have to get their attention, and a lot of times you'll also get another owl to start hooting with you. Let that owl do its thing because the gobblers will answer that owl as well. Another thing I carry with me, and I use this quite a bit as a locator call, if I'm walking a road and I'm not hearing much and I'm running and gunning and I'm trying to get a gobble, I'll pull out a crow call. Two or three times, pretty quick, just like you would hear a crow when they're flying. And that sometimes gets them going. Another time I use a crow call is, let's say I've been working a turkey. And he's been coming in, maybe slow, and I think he's close, but I haven't heard him in a while. And before I pull out the slate call or the box call or whatever to try to get him, make him think I'm a hen, I might hit that crow call and just to give him a shot gobble because they react. And sometimes that works, and that tells me where he is. And from there, I can gauge whether he's coming or not, how close he is. And in fact, I did that on a youth hunt. I said, he's close, he's coming. And sure enough, he popped around the bend and the kid got a pop at him. But it's again, it's not the same every time. And all I can urge you to do right now is to spend your time doing some scouting, find some birds to hunt, make sure you have access to them when the seasons come. Keep an eye on them in the last few days leading up to the season. Check your spots again. Just because they were there a week before doesn't mean they're going to be there a week later. And it's going to change during the season. Food sources, pressure. Pressure is a big thing. So if you're hunting public land, keep that in mind. And so find yourself some birds to hunt, whether you're going out by yourself or you're going with a young person. Spend some time doing that and get your list of where you can find some birds and work on your calls. And from there, you've got to get out there and do it. There's a lot of stuff out there on YouTube, all kinds of podcasts, all kinds of written material, including the stuff we have in Outdoor News. I urge you to absorb all that. With that, I hope you have a happy and a safe turkey season this spring. For New York Outdoor News and the Great Northeast Podcast, I'm Dan Ladd.
Missed a past episode of the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast? You can find previous programs at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platform. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover on this program, get yourself a subscription to Outdoor News. Simply call 800-535-5191 or visit us at OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us again here in 2 weeks to talk everything out of doors. Thanks for listening to the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast.